Hey friends, it's Jenna Overbaugh here. I'm a licensed professional counselor and I'm here to help you do all the hard things, including busting through your fear, intrusive thoughts, and worry so you can live your best life. Some of my earliest memories were being anxious and I lived my life that way until I learned more about OCD and anxiety. Since then, I learned as much as I could and I've been helping people overcome their fear and worry since 2008. Over the years, I've acquired some of the best education, training, and empowerment tools to help you understand your brain a little bit better and to finally overcome all of that fear that's been holding you back. Now, if you're ready to learn more, let's get to it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of All the Hard Things. I am really excited to share with you an amazing resource with you today. I have Dr. Stephen Whiteside. He is a board-certified clinical psychologist, a professor of psychology in the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science, and the director of the Pediatric Anxiety Disorders Program at Mayo Clinic. And I cannot wait to share him with you because this is one area where I don't feel like I am comfortable in my expertise. So in all of my forward-facing stuff, my social media, my courses, my podcast, I'm talking when I'm imagining who's on the other side. I'm imagining like a middle-aged person who can make their own decisions and, you know, is making their decisions for themselves. And it's a totally different kind of ballgame when we're talking about kids and kids and adolescents. And so I've worked with children. I've worked with the parents of children. But there's just a lot more. And I am really excited to be able to finally have a resource, if not a couple of resources, to be able to share with the parents who are out there. Because obviously having anxiety and OCD can be so awful, but it's also awful for the parents involved just to feel so helpless and to not know what to do. And especially when it comes to anxiety, just being at odds with a lot of the different recommendations that are out there. So Dr. Whiteside, I would love for you to just introduce yourself a little bit. And then if you could lead into talking to us about kind of your expertise and what it is that you've been working on recently and just anything just right off the bat that you want to talk about as it relates to kids who have OCD and anxiety and how we can help parents.
Great. Thanks so much. I really appreciate you having me here, Jenna. I'm excited to talk with you. Yeah. So I'm a child psychologist. I work at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I've been here, gosh, for a long time now. I first came in 2001 and I've been the director and developing our pediatric anxiety disorders clinic, where we work with kids and teenagers along with their families who are struggling with anxiety and OCD. Our approach is pretty standard, straightforward exposure therapy. And so the basis of what we do is when kids have an anxiety disorder or OCD, they're afraid of something that's not dangerous. We help them face their fears and learn through their own experience that it's not as bad as anxiety or OCD tells them. We think that that's hard. So we always work with kids and teens and their parents together so that their parents can learn to be exposure coaches. That's one of the benefits, one of the privileges of working with kids and teenagers is you have a caring, warm, motivated person there to help the patient outside of the office and the parent. So we think parents are a great resource and we're really glad to have them. And one of the main challenges to getting treatment for anxiety disorders and OCD is the lack of expert therapists who know how to and feel comfortable doing exposure. So we've been working for years to try to help make exposure therapy more available. And we do that primarily in three ways. We have a 5-day intensive treatment program here in Rochester, so families can travel and stay here for a relatively short time to participate in our treatment. We have a website, anxietycoach.mayoclinic.org, that has all our information about how anxiety works and its treatment that families can access. And then also recently, I wrote a book, Anxiety Coach, A Guide for Parents to Treat Childhood Anxiety and OCD, that walks through what we do in our program to help hopefully help people get access to care.
I love all of that. And as you were talking, I literally wrote like a couple of questions that I know are coming up for families who are listening right now. And I have so many questions that I want to ask you. But first things first, I kind of always want to ask in advance, like what I think the families might be thinking. So what if we're talking like directly to a family member right now, they think or believe that their child might have OCD or anxiety, they're really struggling. They hear what you're saying about exposure therapy. It kind of sounds really scary if you've never heard about it before, right? So can you clarify kind of what exposure therapy is, how it's maybe different from a more traditional approach that they might be used to, like cognitive behavioral therapy, and also help clear up any misconceptions that they might have? Like they might feel like it's too scary. Do they have to do the worst case scenario? So just if you could clear some of that up for families, I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah. So, you know, the first answer is, yeah, it is, to be honest, it's hard and it's challenging. But more important than that is that it's not as bad as it seems. And we work with hundreds of kids a year. We work in groups usually for the most part, so that, you know, kids and their parents are going through the experience with other families who are struggling with similar anxiety and OCD. So we're in it together. And we take small steps. We start with things that are manageable. And based on that success, we take a step forward and we gradually work our way up to eventually doing things that kids wouldn't imagine they could ever do. But by the time they get there, they've had so much success in their exposures that they feel confident that they can do it. To kind of explain exposure therapy, let me take a step back a little bit further. And kind of the first step that we do, and this is the first part, kind of the first section of the book, is helping families understand what an anxiety disorder is. And when I say anxiety disorders, I usually lump OCD in with that because we treat them all the same. And an anxiety disorder is when kids feel more nervous, worried, or afraid of something than we would expect them to. And so we're really separating that from a couple things that are really important. The first is general stress. So if a kid is anxious or worried because something is bad is happening in life, they're being bullied, they're failing their classes, there's arguing at home, that's a different problem. And so we don't treat that with exposure therapy. So we want to make sure that what kids are experiencing is an anxiety disorder or OCD and would be appropriate for exposure therapy. And then, so the basic idea is that we can't talk ourselves out of fears that we have because our beliefs are based on our experience. So if parents could just talk their kids out of their fears and worries, I wouldn't have a job. No one would come and need our help. So we have to give kids the experience to learn on their own that what they're afraid of probably won't happen. And just as importantly, that they can handle feeling nervous until those feelings passed. And that's where exposures come in. And so what that looks like practically is, you know, kids come in to see us and we spend the first part of the session kind of reviewing what they've done since we saw them last. And then we spend most of the session doing an exposure exercise. If they've got OCD, they go touch some germy surfaces and get the contamination on them. If they're socially anxious, we go start conversations, ask questions in public. If they're separation anxiety, they do something independently, like maybe sit in a room or walk someplace on their own. And then we, at the end of the session, we review how it went and make a plan for what's going to happen next, before the next appointment. And the main way that differs from other treatment is it's just very active. What often happens with CBT is the therapist ends up talking to families about relaxation or kind of trying to think more logically, or maybe telling them, hey, you should try to face this on your own at home, but not doing it in the moment, which is more stressful and more hard work for everybody. So that's the essential ingredient, and that's what we really focus on.
Yeah, and I told you before this, I have a six-year-old. He turned six yesterday, and I obviously have my own mom, and I can see us all interacting together just in how much I know and love ERP for myself. Obviously, it's just in my nature to want to do that with my son. He's six. He is terrified of sleeping in his room, or he was terrified of sleeping alone in his room, which is kind of developmentally appropriate, right? Like nothing to be too concerned about. My mom, who is in a different generation, obviously, is very quick to say like, oh, you can just be with him all the time and, you know, distract him and use the monster spray and all those things. And it's like, I really believe in teaching him that like fear is okay. Like it's okay to have some fear. Of course you are afraid. Like this is the first time that you've been doing something a little bit new, right? So it's just strange to see like the difference in probably like what most parents think is helpful, but can actually be accommodating, right? So I'm always trying to be very conscientious about like, how can I support my child without accommodating his symptoms. And of course, we never get it right. We're humans, like our emotions. I know my emotions override my logical brain sometimes when it comes to what I believe is best for my son. So I can't even imagine what it's like for another parent out there who doesn't have the ERP background that I have. So I'm glad that you cleared all of that up. It would be so tempting for a parent to want to just send them to this other type of therapy where they talk their way out of it and they do this relaxation. And I wonder how much of that is because it's easier on the parent, right? Like it's easier for the parents to not see their child in distress. And so that brings me to another kind of discussion point, which is I always tell my clients who are the children in this case, but also their parents, like for the parents, it's almost your exposure to see your child in discomfort, right? And like you have a very big modeling expectation and role here. Like the exposure is for you to see your child uncomfortable and your response prevention is to not jump in and save them. Right. And as long as you can do your part of the deal, the child is probably going to be better off doing their part of the deal, which is to touch the germy stuff. I know a lot of your work focuses on parent coaching and involving the families, which is so critically important when we're working with kids. So talk about a little bit, if you can, about the role of the parent. Because when we're working with kids, it's not the same as working with a 25 or 35 year old adult, right? We really rely a lot on that support system where they're living. So talk to us about the importance of the support system, mainly the parent, in this situation when we're dealing with a child or adolescent who has OCD or anxiety.
Yeah, that's a great question. And you make all the great points. And I like to joke with the parents that, you know, the kids are working hard. They're facing their fears. They're doing their exposures. But the parents are really doing double exposures because they are, one, facing their own fears of their child not being successful in the very normal worries we have about our child. But they're also kind of not able to rescue their child. And we as parents love rescuing our kids. Our child has a problem. We don't like it. We want to fix it. And it's just such a rewarding experience to, especially as your kids get older and they look to you for things less, to be able to solve a problem for them feels great. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly normal. But so when we're doing exposures, parents can't do that. They have to handle that feeling and just deal with that distress. So I joke with parents that they're doing twice the work that their kids are doing because they're doing these double exposures. And just like with kids, we as parents learn best through our own experience. And so it's not enough to tell a child with anxiety, here, you need to go face your fears at home when these things pop up, but not do it with them in the session. You know, common sense and research tell us that exposure therapy is most successful when you do it in the session with therapists. Because it makes sure it gets done, make sure it gets done well, and it builds their confidence to do it on their own. The same exact thing is true for parents. If we say, hey, I did a bunch of exposures with your child, they really got through it. Now you do it with them at home. One, they don't really know what they're supposed to be doing. And two, they don't have the confidence that it's going to go well. Their child's going to be more nervous at home. Parents are not going to know what to do. It's not going to be successful. So that's why we spend our entire appointments with the child and the parent together doing the exposure so the parent can see in the moment, my child got very nervous. I really wanted to rescue them. I didn't. They stuck with it. Their anxiety went down. And now look how happy and proud they are. And I'm happy and proud. And they've learned through that so that when they do it on their own at home, they're just more likely to be successful because they know what to do and they feel confident in the process.
Mm-hmm. And similar to that, I have also read, and you might have other thoughts or statistics on this, that like 80% of the treatment gains are actually made outside of therapy sessions. That like obviously having to like work outside of that like 1 hour a week, right? Like you don't just do your exposures with your therapist and your parent. You actually have to continue to do that, right? And when these other anxiety provoking situations come up, as you talked about in session, you know, when your hands are feeling a little bit grimy or you have this tendency to want to ask mom for reassurance, you also have to be practicing the tools that we've taught you in session. You can't just do it with Dr. Whiteside in the session for 1 hour a week, and then it's a free-for-all outside of that, right? So what does it look like outside of your therapy sessions then? Like you're giving a good idea of, okay, it's very structured. We're doing it all together. It's a team effort. We're all doing the difficult work here so that we can have that payoff of being really excited and really proud. And I love that. What does it look like once they're home, ideally?
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, planned exposures, the whole point of a planned exposure is that we're doing something that makes you nervous, purely to learn that it's not as bad as anxiety says. And the point of a planned exposure is not to do it and be done and never have to do it again. It's that in this controlled setting, I clearly learned that I can handle this. It's not as bad as anxiety says. So when it happens in real life, I can handle it rather than avoiding or doing rituals. So that's the whole point. And so there has to be a structure to kind of go from, we have to be really intentional about moving from planned exposures to what we sometimes call on the fly exposures or everyday exposures or just handling things when they pop up. And so that's where parents really come in, is helping kids make that transition. So yes, we have to practice exposures in the session. Everyone learns how to do it. And then they have to do planned exposures at home. And we generally say, you know, try to do 3 planned exposures, and that, you know, parent and child sit down, they take one of their tracking forms and they write down what they're afraid is going to happen, keep track of their anxiety, you know, very structured. And then after they've done a few of those and understand how it works and they're less nervous, then they really have to handle it in the moment. So when that situation pops up, rather than avoiding, they do an exposure. And it looked different. Like, so some forms of anxiety and OCD, the different that, you know, planned exposures in the session are very lifelike and super helpful. So like contamination, you know, we can walk down the hallway to the bathroom and that bathroom contamination is just as bad as any other contamination. So the exposures we do are really lifelike and translate very naturally to all other situations where contamination shows up. Other ones are less realistic. So, you know, especially with teenagers who have social anxiety, we can walk around the floor and, you know, start conversations with other staff members. We're in a group setting, so they can start conversations with other kids in the group. But the real exposure happens at school with the kids that you want to be friends with and that you see day in and day out and don't know you're doing an exposure. And those have to happen by kids, you know, doing them on their own. Parents' role is to help them do practice exposures and then to kind of to check in with them to make sure that they're meeting their goals and they're pushing themselves to talk to kids at school. And then another good example is separation anxiety. You know, if the, like you mentioned, you know, if the main fear is going to bed at night or being dropped off at school, we can't really practice that well in the session. Yeah, we can sit by ourselves in a dark room or practice separating to go down the elevator and back up, but we can't really go to bed at night or go to school during the session. So we have to have a very clear plan that the kids and the families use at home. So here's what we're going to do at bedtime tonight. We're going to follow the plan that we rehearsed during the session.
If any of this is resonating with you right now, then you need to check out the OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint. The OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint is my no holds barred, real talk, 3-part course for action takers who want to gain control over their OCD and anxiety and take their freaking life back. It is truly recovery like you've never seen before. I made this OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint because I was sick of the same old vanilla, recycled mental health content on social media, on the internet, and I wanted to raise the bar. I wanted to create a world where people could recover for good with or without a therapist. So the OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint, you could get it all together. It's over 100 videos, over 35 hours of content, but you could also get one of its 3 courses. So we have the foundation, which is level 1. This is where you will lay the groundwork for your recovery journey and truly step into your therapist role and realize ultimately how simple all of this can be when you commit to the process. Then level 2, we have the transformation. This is where you would learn how to prevent rituals, including mental compulsions, dismantling all those other compulsions that really, really trouble you. You will come to understand that behaviors and mental compulsions are yours to control and never the other way around. Then we have the end game. This is where you will bulletproof your recovery no matter what exposures or challenges cross your path. I want you to take your life back into your own hands. So OCD has nothing against you. If you want to learn more about the OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint, just go to www.jennaoverbaughlpc.com/blueprint or head to the link in my show notes. I don't do vanilla. I don't do what's your subtype. I rip open the freaking curtains and take you into the inner workings of my mind and education so you can know this as well as I do. So again, to learn more about the blueprint, go to www.jennaoverbaughlpc.com/blueprint or head to the show notes and click the link below. Yeah, those are all such good examples. And this is like throwing me back to the days where I worked in residential. It was like some people we could very easily mimic their weird scenarios in that controlled situation. Other days we had to get really creative and it was largely up to them to say, yeah, we'll try to take you around and you can ask these questions of the staff members, but I also need to make sure that you're giving that presentation, you know, on Friday and not calling out sick, you know. So really good, just, you know, examples of how it can be done and so nuanced, right? Like the most common question that I get from people in general is like, what are some good exposures for contamination OCD? What are some good exposures for social anxiety? And it's like, it's so radically different from person to person. It totally depends on what their core fear is. The example that I always give is like, two people could have a relationship OCD, and one person could be fearful of regret and being with the wrong person. And, you know, oh my gosh, I've been with the same person for 80 years, and now I know that I don't want to be with them. I regret my whole life. Another person with relationship OCD could be fearful of being a bad person, right? And like, I'm making that person waste their life. Like, that's so morally irresponsible of me. And it's like, those are the targets that we need to go after. Like, we can't just go after the relationship specific worries. We have to kind of like get into the nuances of the person. So, oh my gosh, so many good things. What are some difficulties that you see come up for people, especially parents, let's say, with, you know, I think we talk a lot of ideal situations. Like, in the ideal situation, they come to therapy and their parents are practicing and the kids want to do it. What are some of the difficulties, just lay it out there, of kind of what you see on a day in and day out basis?
Yeah. So let me go back to the kind of that coming up with examples of what to do for exposures, and then I will get to the difficulties. So don't let me forget that and avoid that. That's a good question. So, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and making that fear ladder. So the fear ladder is a list of what exposures the child's going to do for their contamination or social or whatever fear they have. And fear ladders start with doing something super easy, or as easy as we can come up with, and then working on the fears and all the ways it happens, and then ending with something extra challenging to overlearn and really prove they can do anything they set their mind to. And that process of coming up with those lists is such a hassle. I've been doing it for a long time, and I don't enjoy doing it. And for some things, it's just so clear because we do it over and over again. But for someone who's never made a list like that, it's like they have no idea where to start. Like, why would they? It's such a strange thing to do. So it is such an important part to help families put together that plan. And so in Anxiety Coach, in the book format, the first, as I mentioned, the first section is about what an anxiety disorder is. The second section is about how you do exposure, starting very general and getting very specific. But then the third section is, how do you take what you learned, identifying anxiety and doing exposure, to put together a plan for each of the anxiety disorders. And so there's a chapter on OCD, social phobia, generalized anxiety, et cetera. And in those chapters, we have a number of specific example fear ladders of, these are pretty common ways that people with facing these problems do what they do exposures to. So we try to help get people in the right direction with that. In even more detail, on the Anxiety Coach website, we have probably too long with too many examples, a library of fear ladders for basically every fear we could think of. We've got lots of examples of how to do exposure. So any family can go to that website, anxietycoach.mayoclinic.org, and go to the section 3 on fear ladder building and see lots of examples of what to do exposures to. And we always like to talk about, as you're alluding to, we like to talk about the straightforward, this is the way it's supposed to happen. This is how it is ideally. But the most common experience is that it's rocky. You know, sometimes it starts off well and then things get challenging, or sometimes we just have a hard time getting started. And once we get started, then it goes more smoothly. So I would say the common roadblocks and things to be thinking about are, one, accurately understanding a child's experience. So, you know, we specialize in anxiety and OCD. That's what we're here for. And about a third of the patients who come to our program, after we've had that initial evaluation, we and the family decide, you know what, anxiety is not the best description for this. This is more maybe an eating problem, or this is a behavior problem, or this is situational stress, or this is a skill deficit. So first is making sure we accurately understand what they're experiencing and that exposure is the right match. The second most common challenge is that kids just don't want to do it. And that's totally understandable.
We can just validate that, right?
Like, yes.
I work with so many families who say, like, the number one difficulty that I see from parents is like, my child, he doesn't want to change. He doesn't think that there's a problem, but it's ruining our family. Like, think about it from the child or teen's perspective. Like, they don't have things generally like bills to worry about. I can think of in my own like personal experience when I was really struggling with postpartum OCD, it's like I needed to resist doing XYZ because I needed to go to work. Like, I needed to go to work And if I didn't go to work, I was going to lose my job. And if I lost my job, I wouldn't pay my bills and I would disappoint my family. And not to paint the picture of like kids and teens being like all, you know, just enabled and, you know, all that stuff. But it's like they don't, they, if they're set up in an environment where it's kind of working for them, like there's not too much pain associated with it and there's not too much gain associated with anything changing, like they're probably not going to be that motivated to change. So what do you do with that?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, like you said at the beginning, the first thing we need to do is just validate that. It's like, yes, that is, it's common and it's something we see every day and it's not, it doesn't prevent us from making progress. And so, also on the other hand, most kids that we see acknowledge that anxiety or OCD is a problem. They don't like feeling that way. They're not overly excited about being pushed outside their comfort zone, but they realize this is a problem and they're willing to give it a try. Many, you know, there are still some who are not. And then even those that are willing and motivated to do it often have bumps in the road that what we're asking them to do, they really don't want to do in the moment and they're resistant. So the way we manage that is it just a normal part of our treatment program is putting together a motivation plan. And we've got a whole section on that in Anxiety Coach. And that basically kind of the four principles. Number one, you got to take small steps. If parents understand, oh, my child just has to face their fears and get all excited about their child feeling better and just kind of just jump to the top of the list and have try to require their child to do something that they're terrified of, that's just not going to go well. It's going to lead to arguments. So we got to take small steps working together. The second thing is for parents to be really intentional about their attention. When anyone's anxious, when we are anxious, we want someone to fix this problem for us. That's a normal response. And when it's a child or teen, they look into their parents to fix it. Again, a normal response. And as we mentioned earlier, parents love fixing things, a normal response. But what's setting off the anxiety is OCD or an anxiety disorder, then any help from the parents to help get them through the moment accommodation is just making the problem worse or keeping it around. So we help parents learn that, yes, lots of love and warmth and support when your child is trying and following the plan. But if they're not, if they're getting upset and being resistant, then you take your attention away. You stay calm. You don't get angry. You just tell them, look, you need to calm yourself down and manage this. And once you're ready to work, I'll be back here to help you face your fears. And then good, straightforward behavior management. This is hard. So let's set some goals and that are achievable. You know, every five exposures, we're going to do something fun to reward ourselves for our hard work. And then using consequences. If you refuse, just like schoolwork, you don't do your homework, you don't get to go do fun things. If you don't do your exposures that we've planned together so that they're reasonable small steps, no electronics and fun things until it's done. Once it's done, you get your stuff back, but we got to put this work first. All of that is easier said than done. As every parent knows, just general putting down limitations on your kids is hard. And when they are feeling anxious, it really tears us apart to be doing that. And again, that's why we include in parents the whole time with our treatment is we help them use differential attention and we help them put together behavior plans so that they feel confident it's the right thing to do and will work because they've seen it work with us in the session.
Mm-hmm. I love all of that. And I can't imagine any situation where any of those four things wouldn't be helpful. Like, of course, it just makes so much sense. That's where you would start. Something, this might be a little bit more elevated, and I'm sure I'd love to hear your thoughts on it too. One thing that I was guilty of in my earlier days, and I worked with adults, but even like a 21-year-old, you can imagine if they've been, you know, very debilitated by their OCD for that long, emotionally, physically, they're 21 or 22 or 23, but emotionally, they're like a teenager, right? Like they've just been stunted by their life opportunities and, you know, family kind of at their every beck and call. I remember I was working with an individual and everything had to be all organic shoes, all organic jackets, all organic toothbrush, all organic everything, food, everything that you could possibly imagine. And their parents really wanted us to work with them on like laundry, like using different laundry detergent and using different soap, which is all, of course, legitimate, right? Like they were funding a lot of this stuff. And that's a whole nother part of the process, right? Like that could be one of the consequences, right? Like we are no longer going to be funding your, you know, specific requests for these very elaborate and like non-general household use laundry detergent stuff, right? but they wanted us to work with this person on very like adult like tasks. And this person was already not really like all thrilled about treatment. And I tried to do the laundry stuff. I tried to do the teeth brushing stuff. I tried to do the adult stuff and I wasn't getting anywhere, just like tons and tons of resistance. But this person brought in one really fun skirt from Target. And it was just like a regular, like all or not, it was not organic, obviously. It was just like a skirt. And she was very motivated by that. And I was like, man, if I just do some exposures with her around this skirt, like I got to swallow my own pride as much as I want her to be able to do the adult stuff. Sure, fine. Let's like try to do something with this skirt. And she took off. Like she finally, she was more motivated to do that stuff because it was something that she wanted to do. And then we obviously had a conversation like, it can't all be fun, right? Like now that you know, you need to also be applying it to these other things too. I would love to hear your thoughts about, I think sometimes parents can have their own ideas of like what they want their kids' recovery to look like. And of course, yes, they're going to have to like get out of the shower on time. They're going to have to do these things that are like very just normal necessity things. But there's probably some fun inroads too. If we can look at the kids or the adolescents' values, like, you know, maybe this person is late for school every day because they're showering so much, but maybe they're also late for their like friends' get togethers. Like, can we work on that first? Because they're probably going to be more motivated. What do you think about that? Just like some fun little inroads that you might have to do, maybe like put your needs as their parent on the back burner, but in a strategic way so that you can kind of get in through the back door.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Everything goes smoothly when we're all on the same team and we're all motivated towards what we're going for. And so if kids have specific things that they're willing or interested to work on first rather than later, if there's something important that is motivating for them, either whether it's like, you know, if I accomplish this, then my parents will do this for me, or this is something I really want to do that anxiety is OCD is keeping me from doing. So exposure is designed to address that area that's important to them, always makes things go more smoothly. And when you work with kids, that, you know, there's a kind of a wide developmental range there. From our program is generally kids 7 to 17, and kids who are a little bit younger, a little bit older, you know, we work with all the time, but on a case-by-case basis, just to make sure that they're a good fit for our program. And kind of the amount of independence and the amount that will follow the lead of a 7-year-old is different than a 17-year-old for obvious reasons, because a 17-year-old has a better sense of the consequences of what anxiety and OCD is doing and preventing them to do, or a 7-year-old, that's much more difficult for them to do. But for all parents and kids, it's a compromise. Parents really want this to go quickly. They just want to get all these things done. Their child feeling better and being independent, and kids are feeling overwhelmed and want to go slowly. So the decision about what we're going to work on next and what's a big enough step is always a compromise. We, in general, we say we work on it together, but in the end, it's parents who have the final decision about whether or not this is an appropriate or this is a adequate next step forward. Because not all, you know, some kids are very internally motivated, but in general, if the kids, especially younger kids, have more control, we just aren't going to end up making the progress that we need to. It's always easier to do exposures tomorrow than it is to do them today. But we also tell parents, you know, you have that responsibility and you have to use that wisely, and you can never punish your child by doing an extra hard exposure. You can't get frustrated and do an extra hard exposure. You need to do your best. Pick something that is a reasonable small step forward. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned earlier, none of us are perfect. So parents are going to often make a mistake of not pushing hard enough, and sometimes make a mistake of pushing too hard. And that's okay. Kids learn from that. We learn from that. And as long as we're all have good intentions, then we can work through it and be successful.
Mm-hmm. If I've learned anything from just like my own background, being an OCD specialist, and then also having my now 6-year-old, I've come to realize that we are, as parents and loved ones, we are so much more in control in a good way. Like, we can really shift the narrative in such a significant way. I've come to learn that the best and most loving thing that we can do for our kids is to do the hard thing now for their later benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to me, that's love. Like, that is the best and like most legitimate expression of love, is like, I love you so much that I am willing for you to be mad at me. I am willing to sit with discomfort myself because I know that this is what's better for you in the future. And it happens in micro ways that aren't even related to OCD and anxiety, right? Like my son wants to stay up later and watch one more episode. Honey, I love you so much that I am willing for you to be mad at me and for me to have some guilt and indecision because I know that you need to get to bed, right? And like, I'm going to stick to that, right? So to me, love is doing the hard thing now, knowing that it's going to make a difference and be better in the future. And that's what all of this comes down to, right? Like doing the hard thing now because it's going to make a difference in the future. And, you know, I think that's why parents are kind of the best people to command this work and to really see it out and model it and make this like not just OCD and anxiety recovery happen, but really be stewards and stewardesses of this, like this change that says, I'm not going to let fear and anxiety call the shots anymore. Like, we're going to make decisions that are good for our future selves. We're not going to let fear and anxiety run the show. I'm going to show you how to do that. So, you know, when, what would make like the best scenario for a family to be able to do this just within the family? And then when would a family maybe potentially need to seek like mental professional help?
Yeah. So I agree with, I love the way you phrase all that. And that is like one of the main things that parents need and parents ask about when they come to our program is that they need permission and reassurance that it's the right thing to do to allow their child to be upset and uncomfortable now so that they can be stronger and more resilient in the future. And I will sometimes phrase it to parents is that it is not your job to make your child happy and comfortable right now. It is your job to raise them to be resilient and independent. And that means allowing them to be upset and calm themselves down. If you think about it, like if you're a teenager, a young adult, and your emotions are so frightening to you that you can't handle them on your own, you need somebody else to help you feel better, that's really debilitating. And so we need to help kids learn early on that they can feel really upset, really anxious, really grimy, contaminated with OCD, and handle it independently. That is such a powerful lesson for them to learn. And I think it's helpful for parents to kind of be let off the hook that it's okay for you to step away. And it's super hard for us. So that, like, once again, that goes back to, yes, give them permission. And then two, allow them practice here with us so that they feel confident it's the right thing to do. You know, and so my intention in writing Anxiety Coach was to educate families on exposure therapy with the idea that there are probably a number of families out there whose their child's anxiety or OCD symptoms are pretty mild. And kind of what we're describing in terms of exposure therapy fits pretty well with something a parent would be comfortable doing. And they can take the book and run with it. And that's pretty much all they need to help their child get past this relatively mild fears or worries. But it would be pretty irresponsible to think that someone with real significant anxiety, a self-help book would be enough to get through that. So the other goal is back to the challenge that exposure therapy is so hard to find. And that if with this book, families whose child is struggling with pretty severe anxiety and OCD are able to learn that this is what I need to find in treatment. And that doesn't make it necessarily easier to find it, but it helps them be an informed consumer so that when a therapist is not doing the right thing or is describing just talking with them or doing play therapy or doing relaxation and not doing the exposures, they know that's not the right fit for their child and they don't waste their time and resources on therapy unlikely to be helpful, but continue to pursue and look for a therapist who does exposure therapy.
Yeah. And I was just looking at your book. Like, I love that there is obviously like the whole coaching aspect, but I talk about OCD as kind of being like a competitive game. Like, I'm a naturally competitive person. Like, I use those kind of analogies a lot, right? Like, you know, I always tell my clients that you have to have like an offensive strategy, which is to do the exposures, kind of go out of your way to do these uncomfortable things. But we also have to have a defensive strategy. Like, when these random exposures come up, I want to make sure that you know how to handle it, right? Like, you didn't offensively go out of your way to make that exposure thing happen, but it happened, life happened, and how are you going to deal with it? So I'm just loving the whole like vibe, and I think that it's going to be really helpful for people. And like you said, you know, even if it's not this like hugely in and of itself radical like transformation, it fixes the entire household forever, which I'm sure it probably has the potential to do for lots of people. It's going to be that mind-blowing moment of like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this existed. Like, all I see on social media, all I've ever been taught was you know, talk therapy, let's talk it out, positive affirmations. And, you know, at the very least, it's going to be such a nice inroad for people where they feel finally like they have resources. And, you know, that's, as a parent, like, it's such a helpless feeling to not know what to do or how to help your child. And mm-hmm. once you finally see it and you see that light at the end of the tunnel, like, the feeling that you're going to be giving these families is going to be just so valuable and so helpful.
Yeah, that is the most rewarding part of the job, is seeing the brightness in kids' faces when they're done with an exposure. And it's just clear that they feel relieved and they feel proud of themselves. And then parents are just happy. You know, I mentioned earlier, one of the ways that we've tried to make exposure therapy more accessible is our 5-day intensive treatment program, where kids with anxiety or OCD or teenagers and their families come and stay here in Rochester from Monday through Friday. And we do a lot of exposures together in a group. And we're doing one of those right now. And it is by far the most enjoyable part of my job, because you have this group on Monday where all these kids are anxious and quiet, and then on Friday they're doing these amazing things that none of these families would predict that their child would be able to do this on. It's like 4 days later, and it's just amazing to see the transformation. And it's a bit heartbreaking times when parents will tell you, you know, we've been in therapy for years and this week has been the most progress we have made. And it's not because we're so great, it's just because we're doing exposures and nobody else had done that before.
And I just got off of an episode literally prior to this one. It's with Elise, for those who are following along. And we talked about how the strategies that we're talking about, or if we peel them away, like, these are basic lifestyle strategies that everybody can benefit from. Like, doing difficult things that are in line with your values where fear is holding you back, right? Like, who can't have a better life when they're, you know, rocking that mentality? The willingness to make space for uncomfortable emotions and see them as internal temporary experiences rather than these things that you have to fight with and get rid of and adjust and judge and edit. And, like, that's what I want my son to be able to do. Like, I want him to have that mentality. I want him, you know, like you said, it's not my job to make sure that he's happy. That's a byproduct probably of all the other work, hopefully, that we do together. But I want him to live a life where he knows his values, where he can feel whatever he feels and still do the things that he wants to do and needs to do in his life. And, like, I feel like if we do that, we've done our jobs. So I love everything that you're doing. I would love for you so much. Can you give, like, one or two little, just like anecdotes of, like, helpful words of inspiration or motivation for, I just imagine a family member out there, a parent who feels like totally helpless, nowhere to go, just feels like they don't even know where to start. Like, what would you say to them?
Yeah. So first of all, anxiety and OCD are both treatable, and that even if your child has had treatment in the past, there's a very good chance it wasn't the best treatment, and that we should all feel optimistic that with the right exposure therapy that our kids can get better. And then secondly, when kids are feeling more nervous, worried, or afraid than we would expect them to, so an anxiety disorder, OCD, the very best thing for them is to gradually and warmly help them face their fears rather than avoid. And everyone can help a child do that. Parents, teachers, therapists.
Amazing. Please tell us more about the work that you're doing, what we can learn more from, where we can learn more from you. I will, of course, put all of these links, everything we've talked about so far, in the show notes and more, where you can find Dr. Whiteside, where you can find his work, everything else that we've talked about. But I would love for you to give yourself a shout out and just let people know where they can find you. What are their next steps?
Yeah. So a great resource is anxietycoach.mayoclinic.org. It has all our information about how we treat anxiety and OCD, as well, also how to manage challenging behavior. There's a find help section that has information specifically about our programs here in Rochester, including our 5-day intensive treatment program, which is designed for people across the country who can't find good exposure therapy closer to home. And then in mid-April, my book, Anxiety Coach, Parent's Guide for the Treatment of Childhood Anxiety and OCD, is coming out.
How exciting. I didn't want to say it, but I have it up right now. And it says it's going to be released on April 16th, 2024, almost 2 months from when we are filming this. And yeah, so I am super excited for you. So much good. I just can tell from your knowledge and everything that you've shared, like, this is going to be an amazing resource for people. I can't wait for me to be able to finally have somewhere to guide people who come to me and need some of this help and some of these resources. So thank you so much for everything that you do. Any last minute thoughts, any last minute links or anything? Otherwise, I'm going to put everything in the show notes.
I think that's it. I just thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's exciting to hear about the resources you're providing to families as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I am hopeful that, you know, in 5-10 years that finding a good ERP therapist is not as much of a needle in a haystack. And I hope that it becomes much more the norm that instead of like distracting our kids away from these uncomfortable emotions, that we're also able to sit with those uncomfortable emotions. And like I said, do the loving thing, which is to do the hard thing for the benefit of the future. That's really the best thing that we could do. So Dr. Whiteside, thank you so much for being here. I hope to stay in touch, and everyone be on the lookout for the book. It is Anxiety Coach, A Parent's Guide to Treating Childhood Anxiety and OCD. All the links will be in the show notes. And thank you so much again for being here.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. It would mean the world to me if you would take a quick minute to please give it a review. And while you're at it, check out my website at www.jennaoverbaughlpc.com to sign up for my free email newsletter that includes an instant free downloadable PDF to help jumpstart your OCD and anxiety recovery journey. You can also find me on Instagram or TikTok at jenna.overbaugh. If you liked what you listened to here, you can download some of my workshops and courses on OCD, anxiety, and treatment at my website as well. Thank you so much again for tuning in, and until next time, keep doing all the hard things.